It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Thank you, Bus People. Thank you.
Yeah, very cool. Glad to have the Bus People with us. And, there was something else I was going to mention. This week, a few days ago, didn't you have a birthday?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
Well, happy birthday, everybody. Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. And,
thank you. It wasn't that hard.
Wow. Auditorium full. Yeah. Well, congratulations. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. No, thank you very much.
Cool.
It's just another one in a long string of them. And,
yes.
But it was cool. Actually, I ended up working and bottling some red wine. So, you know.
Oh, well. You know. So you could celebrate at the same time.
There you go. Yes. Drink wine and celebrate my birthday.
A little bit here, a little bit there. Great. I just want to pass that along because I found that out yesterday I think it was yesterday. Cool. It must have been on Facebook or something because I haven't been on Facebook in a long time, but I don't know if you had your birthday on it. But, okay.
Yeah, I had a lot of birthday wishes on Facebook. And very good. A lot of people were on there. So thank you again for all those who wished me happy birthday. It made it even nicer that people did wish me happy birthday, which really gave it a good birthday because of all that birthday wishes. So
good.
Yeah.
It's amazing what Facebook can do.
Yes, it is. Yeah, you can get in touch and keep in touch with everything that way. Yeah,
that's right. Welcome to the program, everybody. Please get on the phone and call us at 646-727-3235. And we have a guest tonight, and I believe I'm going to go out and grab our guest real quick.
Okay. Well,
so,
we'll say goodbye to you
right
for
back.
A second here while you go do that. And we will wait until he joins us. Our guest tonight is going to be his name is Jake. Oh, I'm sorry, Jake. Jake was a couple weeks ago. Paul, and Paul's last name is, and I'm afraid I might say this wrong, but Vigna, I believe it's pronounced V-I-G-N-A, Paul Vigna. Paul is a blogger. He has a blogging site. We'll talk to him about wine and his involvement in wine, what he blogs about, and all that good stuff. And then depending on how our time goes, I've got other information I can pass on to you tonight about different things we haven't covered that I keep holding off because we've had such good speakers over the last 4 or 5 weeks. One thing, the wine, we always have ourselves wine during the program, and my wine tonight is called Our Daily Red. It's a 2010 California table wine, organic, and it states no sulfites detected. It is a organic wine from Northern California area, from the I don't know. It says on it, though, vintage and bottled by Our Daily Red in American Canyon. So American Canyon is just north of San Francisco. Certified organic by the California Certified Organic Farmers. So interesting wine. It also states on the label, vegan friendly, which is something you don't see on a whole lot of wine bottles. I'm looking up the website. Eventually, I will get to it before the program's over, and we'll talk about it a little bit at the end of the program. But it's a table red wine, light. I've been enjoying a glass of it. It's not real heavy, not real strong. 12.5% alcohol by volume. It's a pleasant. We'll talk about the organic wine a little bit more. We've talked about organics quite a bit, and I never had a chance. I saw this one, wanted to give it a try and talk about it a little bit on the air. We have our guest sitting there in the green room waiting for us. Paul, you are with us, I understand. I'll bring you on the air here. And
hello.
Hello. Thank you for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
You are a wine blogger. Is that one of your hobbies?
Yeah, it is. No, well, yeah, it's a hobby that I've tried to turn into my job, but unsuccessfully. I mean, if I could get paid to do this full time, I'd be real happy. My main job is sports editor for the Harrisburg Patriot News, and the wine blog I've done, I guess it's 4 years in April, so it's focused on regional wineries, Maryland and Pennsylvania, and once in a while, we'll include material in New York or Virginia or some other states, but primarily those two states.
So what's your opinion on Pennsylvania and Maryland wines compared to our wineries and wines compared to others that, well, of course, we're not going to try to compare to California or to France or any of that, but their status as far as wines around the country go and all that. What do you feel about that?
I haven't tasted too many wines from outside of, at least in the United States, outside of California or Oregon or Washington. There are some wineries making wine, I think, that could match the best of wines in other states. And I think they're probably the the other part of that is not everyone makes the serious wines. I mean, there are a lot of wineries in both states that either in total or in part have a profile that leans toward a sweeter wine. So I guess those are good wines, but in terms of the kind of wines that bring a state respect, that tends to be the serious wines, and I think that's where the states are still sort of catching up to even their neighbors, even to Virginia or New York. But sometimes people are just dismissive. I know my boss kids me sometime. He just shakes his head and says, "Pennsylvania wines. You got to, what are you writing about that for?" But there are some really, really good wineries and winemakers in both states. And as the industry grows in both states, I think I don't know if they'll gradually catch up because New York and Virginia keep advancing. But, I think they'll start to cement their reputation as wines that you definitely want to try.
Well, you know what? You said something there, and I've heard this before, and this is something we might talk about for a little bit here. You said the serious wines, and you said a lot of them do the fruit wines, and they're whatever, the combinations and whatever's available there, and they'll add blueberry to the Chardonnays and stuff like that and make this.
Well, or they'll use the Concord or Niagara or some of those grapes, too, and make a 4% or 6% wine.
Yeah, and you find it up in that part of the country. But the point I want to talk about here a little bit is we talk about serious wines, and whenever somebody says serious wines, immediately my mind goes to Cabs, Merlots, and Pinot Noirs, you know. But the thing is, in this country, I get so many – in my winery, the people that come in, I get so many people like sweet wines. And so we calling those serious wines, those heavy reds like that, maybe it's time to start reexamining what we feel is the serious wines, because good sweet wines tend to sell a lot.
Well, I know.
You look at the wines around this country and the wineries around this country, and everybody I've talked to, and we've been going through this alphabetically, you know, in the states and all that, and just about everybody I've talked has their sweet wines, and they sell. They sell like crazy.
Mm-hmm. No, they do. They really ring the cash register, and I think some wineries will do sort of a mixed profile where they'll have their sweet wines and then they'll have their serious wines, and I think they'll admit that the reason they make those sweet wines is to keep the cash flow, to keep the cash register operating, and they tend to be a lower price point, and they also tend to have a bigger audience. I talk to any of the wineries on certainly any of the wine trails here in central Pennsylvania or over toward Philadelphia or even up in the Lehigh Valley up in northeastern Pennsylvania, and everyone really says the same thing. There's very few wineries who have just said we're going to make serious wines, and I think the term is accurate in terms of I guess wine critics that take the wine seriously. They're not going to take a Niagara or a Concord seriously, but they'll definitely take a Cab or a Merlot or a Vignette, maybe to some extent, or a Bordeaux blend a lot more seriously. So they're not sure. I think you could say almost a handful of wineries that just make serious wines, and everybody else has this mix of wines they know they can sell, and then the more serious wines that they don't sell as much. And I think the other thing too is they'll admit that they much prefer to drink the drier wines, but they know their clientele doesn't. So it's almost silly not to make it if you know that's going to be part of your business.
I was told way back years ago when we opened, over 10 years ago now, I was told that we don't make wines that sell. We don't make wines we like. We make wines that sell.
Wines that sell, yes.
And that's basically what you just said. I mean, I think if you sit down with almost any winemaker and say, what do you prefer? What is your table wine at home? I would think that over 90% of them is going to say the serious wines. Whereas you ask most of the customers that come in the door, and your percentage starts jumping into the sweet wines.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at what they use them for, too. I mean, I don't know how it is in your state, but a lot of the business that the regional wineries have are event-driven, and so that tends to be wine that is consumed maybe without food, but, you know, more out in front of a musical group or some sort of event. So there's not necessarily the idea of, oh, I'm going to pair this wine with this food, but it becomes almost more of a beverage to have while you're being entertained. And, you know, I think there's 13 wine trails in Pennsylvania, four or five in Maryland. So, they drive their business with various events, some through the summer, some centered around harvest and others around barrel tasting in February or March. But those events are big deals for a lot of wineries.
That's where a lot of them
is. Is that similar in your down? Is that similar there too?
We don't really have wine trails because we are so spread out down here.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the closest winery to me is about 30 minutes away, but then the next closest from that is almost an hour.
Wow.
And so we're really not quite. There's one that's about 45, 50 minutes away, which is close to an hour. But they're different directions. Everybody is different directions. So we really don't have the wine trails that drive it. We are individual. But Muscadine grape is the Rotundifolia and the Brusca families of grapes are the ones that grow down here. And because of that, then the sweet wines, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Muscadine. Muscadine is like a love-hate thing. You either are a fan of it or you're not. There's very little indifference about it. But Florida has that. I use a hybrid grape myself, so I'm not a Muscadine grower. But most of the wineries down here are, which tends to make a sweet wine. And so that's what people look for. It seems like the only place I've talked to wineries in California and California and Oregon, and there's quite a few wineries in Oregon that just make the serious wine, just make the heavy reds. In fact, we talked to one that did just Pinot Noir, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, is there a market? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's a tremendous market for it here. But we get back to that. When you go to Oregon, you're going to expect that.
Right.
But when you go
that's a great point.
You go to Pennsylvania, you go to New York, you go to Maryland, you don't expect those heavy reds. You expect something different. You expect maybe fruit wines or maybe blends or something else. And doing the program, it has surprised me of how many of the serious wines are being made around these different states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think you lose. Maybe they get overshadowed by sort of the total amount of wine made and how much of it is sweeter. One thing going on in our area, you might be familiar with Chad's Ford Winery, which was one of Pennsylvania's first and has been an anchor of the Brandywine wine trail for years and years, and is, I think, best been known. Eric Miller has been the winemaker there and has made just some delicious, serious wines. They've just recently gone to more of a national market where they're making a lot more sweet wines. They've cut the number of days that they're having visitors in. The tasting room's only open 4 days, where only a couple years ago it was open 7. So I don't know if I mean, it says a lot. I don't know that other wineries will necessarily go in that direction, but the owners there have decided to cash in on the appeal of sweet wines, and they've dramatically increased the amount they're making and selling it actually throughout the South. I think they have deals with Kroger and some of the other distributors down in the southern part of the country. So I do know other winemakers and wineries look at that and wonder, what does the future hold? If someone like Chad's Ford, that's so highly respected, I think nationally and really is an icon in the Mid-Atlantic, to make that decision, I think has people sort of wondering what's next for them. That's a sign that you have to take sort of seriously as far as where things are going. But I'd also say that, and I don't know how many of these wineries you've heard of, Black Ankle in Maryland, Allegro in Pennsylvania, Pinnacle Allegro. Ridge, Vala, Vinecrest to some extent, and then this Briar Valley that's out closer to Pittsburgh. It's in Bedford.
Right. We talked to them.
They all make some really good dry wines. I don't like to use the word world class, but certainly wines that would hold their own against any in the country.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add too that The other one of the things that fascinates me about what I do, and I just try and cover it as a beat. There's a lot of people that cover wines that do it as sort of wine critics and, you know, try their bottle of wine and offer a suggestion. I do very little of that. What intrigues me is the industry as a whole and the characters. I mean, to me, the industry draws a lot of interesting people, former farm families, and just sort of it's a fascinating mix of folks that are involved in the industry now. But, I think the one other thing you have to add here, and I hear being at least Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland in particular, is that the industry's so young. I know a lot of winemakers still are in the process of experimenting. The viticulturalists are trying to figure out, well, what does grow well here? What might be our best grape moving forward? And the business has only grown dramatically the last 10 years. So it's new. I mean, God, compared to California, compared to anywhere on the West Coast or New York, the industry is in its infancy here. So, I mean, who knows 10 or 20 years from now what some of the more popular sort of serious grapes might be. A lot of that still being, is still an experiment. They're still trying to decide what works and what doesn't work. Well, and I don't know if you have that down there, but that sort of issue.
We have an issue with Pierce disease down here. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But,
no, I'm not.
Pierce disease, it's spread by a little bug called the glassy-winged sharpshooter, and it affects warm climates, and the bug goes around and kills the grapevines. So we're never going to be growing Cabernets as a crop or a Merlots or Chardonnays or Rieslings because of that. So most of the grapes we grow down here is French-American hybrids or the Muscadine. I use a French American hybrid. You were mentioning something there. I want to jump back on too. You mentioned shipping the chance for shipping out to different places. Do you think shipping laws in the states are hindering the fact that some of these wineries aren't willing to branch out and try to make some stuff that they can sell other places? I mean, I know Pennsylvania is antiquated, if you will, in some of their laws. But
yeah, I think there's a lot in flux, Ron, in terms of what the rules are, how they might change. I mean, there's a big move here to privatize, and there's one particular legislator who failed last year and has just started another push to try and change the business of selling wine and spirits out of the hands of the government and privatize it. So there's a lot going on here, and I think a lot probably will change over the next few years. I think some of it has to do with just the size of the wineries. I mean, Chats Ford, I think, is 70,000-75,000 gallons. I mean, there's very few wineries that are in their class in terms of the amount of wine they make. So, frankly, a lot of the smaller wines, particularly or wineries, especially the newer ones, their bigger problem is keeping the shelves full. And, especially those first few years, I know several wineries, several owners have told me they were advised one way because someone else might have had success with a particular wine or moved a particular wine, and then it turned out that they wound up selling some of their other varieties sold faster, and all of a sudden there they are with an empty shelf and maybe three or four months before they can make some new wine and put it on. So I don't think shipping is necessarily an issue for Pennsylvania wineries. I think sometimes, more often than not, it's inventory that maybe you didn't plan right, or maybe it's just sales were better than you expected. But I think that's a problem that plagues these wineries more.
But also, too, I go back to shipping because there's so many shipping problems around the country, basically, in so many different areas. If you want to ship to another state and stuff, so many states have so many other rules and regulations that you can't ship now. And if you build up a clientele of out-of-state guests, of out-of-state drinkers that love your wine, the restrictions put it to the point where you almost can't do anything about it.
No, that's true. You don't have any choice there. I mean, I think what's happened, I know in Pennsylvania, is they've pushed and changed a few of the laws to give themselves more opportunity to sell their wares at festivals and farmer markets and those type of things. I think they used to be limited to the number of days in a year that they could sell, and recently had more days added, so and also more places they could go to sell their product. So I think that's how some of them have adjusted to try and get their product in more places and in places where they can sell for a longer period of time.
I'd like to say the laws are changing all the time, so therefore that's always a big plus. That's something that's helping wineries everywhere. Every state we've talked to, that's something that's helping. Pennsylvania wines.
155 wineries, yeah.
155.
Yeah.
We've talked to different wineries in Pennsylvania so far and some winemakers. We've talked to a couple of different people and a wine judge in Pennsylvania, which was very interesting. But the thing, Pennsylvania wines, what is, if you're going to get an identity to Pennsylvania wines, what would it be? Would it be sweet?
I think so.
You think?
In general. I think sweet and I think fruit. I mean, certainly in central Pennsylvania is or around where I am, there's a lot of orchards. A lot of wineries might sell anywhere from 6 to 10 to maybe a dozen types of fruit wines. So, I mean, if you were going to paint a broad brush on, in general, you know, if you list what everybody sells, I mean, they all do the standards. Almost everybody's going to have a Chardonnay. Almost everyone's going to have a Cab. In this state, most of the wineries will sell a Chamberson. A lot of them will have a Vidal. And this applies, I think, to Maryland, too. But just as many, if not more, will be selling the Concord and the Niagara and the fruit wine. So yeah, I think in general, I don't think you call the sweet wines sort of signature wines. I'm not sure any state wants to be known that its fruit wines are its signature wines. But in terms of what moves, what people like, you know, why they buy it, are they necessarily having it at dinner or just sort of sitting around on the back porch having a glass or, like I say, sitting out at an event on a blanket watching a group play, then definitely the sweeter, the semi-sweet, the sweet wines, red and white, do sell the best. They're the ones that bring that money in.
I guess
so.
Maybe
hopefully that answers your question. Yeah.
Yes, it does. I guess maybe though that, and then it really should become our job as wine people, bloggers, writers, makers, blog talk radio, to start educating people and having wine with food. I mean, this is what I'm, you know.
Yeah. Well, I would. I'm getting more and more like that. I know. Maryland has a lot of wine festivals. They probably have 6 or 7 major festivals now throughout the spring and summer and early fall. And they just started something called Decanter, and they did it in conjunction. Horse racing is big in Maryland, so they held it at Pimlico, where the Preakness is held. And they had it a couple weekends ago on a Saturday and Sunday. And I think you paid $30 and you got in. There were 20 wineries there. It was also a day when the horses were running, so you could sort of go from table to table on the grandstand and then head outside. And it was a lovely day. So watch a couple races, go back in. They had workshops on everything from betting on horses to making wine. So it was a different type of event. I've never seen anything quite like it. And yet, I just I went to a few tables and I tried some wine, but it's like I can't really drink it that way. It's like, please get now. I mean, they had food there. I mean, you could have bought sandwiches and things, but I mean, I'd rather go to a. I mean, if I had my preference, you know, I'd rather go to a winemaker's dinner and actually sit down and hear the winemaker talk about the vintage and talk about the wine and pair it up with the food. But, you know, you're talking about different price points too. I mean, most of those in our area go $65 to $75, $80, depending on the number of courses, where most of your festivals are $20, $25 maybe. So, I mean, you're gonna draw a different crowd to that. The Maryland event was a lot of young people, a lot of people under 35. And if you're trying to build your industry, you certainly want to get younger people interested in your product. So, I think it's a smart thing what both states are doing, whether it's with events on the wine trail or with the wine festivals. But I know the more I drink wine, the less I really like drinking it without a meal, you know, except maybe when I get home at night and just have a glass just to wind down. But, pair it with food. And I've heard winemakers say that, too. It's like, geez, much rather sort of be in a winemaker setting than a festival-type setting. But, I think business dictates you have to do both.
And you it's a good point being, too, that you pairing it with food. I preach that. I teach a class every month, and I preach the pairing wine and food. I mean, you start getting that, it gives a whole new dimension to the wine, and that could be the reason, going back to our original topic, of why the premium wines, the heavy wines, the big reds and stuff like that, aren't really drank that much, because most people are not going to sit down, just open up a bottle of Cab or Merlot or Zinfandel and just have it by itself. That really does go with food.
Right. No, agreed. But maybe a Vidal or again, the Niagara, the Concord, any of those, that's sort of your party wines. You're going
right.
You're going to have company or go to an event. That's certainly... that certainly more suits the setting. And, you know, so around here, May, June, July, August, September, that's a lot of months that you want those lighter and sweeter wines to consume versus having anything heavy and dry.
And I think that could be one of the reasons why overall around the country that we have so many followers of the lighter, fruitier wines or the lighter style wines, be it fruit or not. Concords and stuff like this, because they can be set down and just at any time.
Chill them.
Yeah, someone. Right. Oh, it's
yeah.
Like drinking
yeah.
a grape. I mean, I hear that
well,
a lot. Yeah.
I know.
So because of that, I guess that could be one of the reasons why we are seeing such a big falling of the lighter, fruitier style wines because of how they're consumed. You mentioned young people. I'm going to talk about that a little bit with you, too. In your tastings and your travels and in your blog, do you find that young people are turning more and more to wine, or is it just a natural flow, or is it a higher percentage, or what do you have?
I sense that more kids and now at my age they're kids,
with apologies to the kids out there listening, but,
in their 20s and 30s they I think might be switching to wine, say, earlier than their parents did. But I also think I think a lot of them certainly appreciate the serious wines and are interested like you and I on how they're made and understanding the differences and styles. But I also think too that part of that is what I saw at the festival, that okay, let's go have some fun and we'll mix it with wine. And I think that's really where these wineries bring in younger customers. You know, it's not just to come in and necessarily do a tasting, but if you're having a, some sort of a party, you're having a group in, you're having a band, and then I think you're going to get the attention of a lot more young people, because they're there not only they're there to drink. And I'm not sure they're doing a whole lot of swirling. I don't think they're swirling the wine too much in their mouth.
Smelling
but they're there to party.
Color.
They're there to have a good time, and the wine is part of it. And I don't know that too many wineries would disagree with attracting those in their 20s in that fashion. So it's sort of a win-win. And I don't know. And then what we don't know is how many of those kids in 10 years from now, what will they be drinking then? Will they still be drinking sweet wines, or will they be by then drinking drier wines? That I don't know if anyone's done a study on that, but my guess is they will probably be drinking maybe drier wines, Merlots or some of the blends.
If they stay with it, yes. You mentioned something in that too that was an interesting point that I just thought of. Wines and wineries are the only area that you do find the wine tastings and the band and events and stuff like that. You don't see breweries doing that. You don't see distilleries doing that. But that's something that wineries do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what we're seeing around here for breweries is opening the restaurant, and all under the same roof. So it could be Victory, or it could be Fly Fox, or Triumph, or any of those sort of the Philadelphia area wineries, or I'm sorry, breweries. Trogues up here in the Hershey-Harrisburg area. And all of them have gone to bigger facilities where they put in a restaurant, and so they serve the food, along with the beer, whether it's sort of a tasting, a flight. I know I just went to a brewery in the Philadelphia suburbs and got a flight. So, I mean, that'd be pretty similar to what you could get at a winery. But yeah,
right.
You're right. I mean, they aren't so much event driven, but that's the evolution that's taken place, at least here, is this move from just being a brewery and distributing your goods to stores. Now, as a customer, you're actually going to the brewery, having a meal, and then maybe picking up some beer and taking it home.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But
you finding out too that a lot of people in wine really like beer, because I've sure talked to a lot of winemakers and they love their beer too. I don't know what you found in your.
I think what it is that I tell people all the time, they come into the winery up here for a tasting, and the guy will stand back and the girl's up at the counter doing a wine tasting. I said, "Don't you taste wine?" He goes, "Well, no." I'm a beer drinker, and I explained to him. I said, you approach them both the same,
mm-hmm.
And that's people. I think this is why a lot of wine people and in the business, myself included, like some good beers. You look at the color, you look at the head on it. You don't want a head that's too small or too big. You
mm-hmm.
smell it, you taste it. I mean, it's just basically the same as what you would approach a glass of wine. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're very close to parallel. I have a lot of the customers that come in and say, "Well, I normally drink beer." And I said, "Well, try wine. Approach it the way you would beer." And it surprises them. It's not as heavy in the taste as you find in a lot of beers. But it's something new and different for them. And so, yes, to answer your question directly, I find a lot of people in the business who really do talk about wine or about beer along with their wine, and who enjoy beer as much as they do the wine.
Yeah, I agree, although I guess we're here to talk about wine.
Yeah.
Sorry I took you off
track.
We're
all about wine. Yeah. Oh, I branch out all the time. Yeah, but
yeah, what other wineries are you familiar with? I heard you say, was it Pinnacle Ridge or Briar Valley? One of them I heard you say,
We've talked quite a few. In fact, I've been on, I've sent emails out to different ones and all that. And so I've been in touch mm-hmm. with quite a few of them up there. So names pop out at me because I have corresponded a little bit with some of them, trying to get them onto the program and join me of an evening. But we've talked. I don't have my full list of who we talked.
No, that's all right. I didn't know if there were any that sort of symbolize. I don't know if you've been how often you've been through here and you've had a wine and said, oh, that's pretty, you know, that represents the state very well. So
No, I haven't been to Pennsylvania. I believe me.
Yeah.
Mike and I would love to be able to get on a tour bus
road
and
trip,
go around and do these programs live right there in front of wineries, but alas, it's not. not going to happen.
There's a husband and wife in Jersey, I think, Wine Trail Travelers. Have you talked to them at all?
No,
the Sullivans. They have a. You ever go to their website? They've been, it looks like, all over the country and basically do a review of all these wineries that they've stopped at. And it's personal. Talks about the people they've met and what the winery's like and what the wines are like. And it's not done in a critical style. It's more of an informative, educational, here's what we found and here's what we liked. And I guess in some cases here, maybe what we didn't like. But talk about a resource and a business I wouldn't mind doing. they've been to states all over the country and have all these visits documented. So
what is their website?
Someday.
Do you know?
I think it might be Wine Trail Traveler. Maybe you type that in your search engine along with Kathy Sullivan, and I think you'd be able to find it. And the other folks I was curious if you've talked to is from the drinklocalwine.com, which is a sort of a grassroots movement that started a few years ago by a couple of wine writers, one in Washington and one in Texas. And they started having these Drink Local Wine Weeks, and they were actually the one just concluded out in Denver, where a lot of them gathered. But on that website, I think it's Drink Local Wines, or I think drinklocalwines.com. I'll have to try it here on my computer. I mean, they have blog rolls from people like me who cover wines in their state, and it's pretty interesting to hop on and really see people sort of writing about the same thing that I am. So
oh,
I mean, those are two good sources for certainly for more conversations, but just for your own education. I really like both sites.
Mike, do you remember some of the wineries we talked to here in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, the last one was the vineyard at Hershey, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
They're brand
okay.
new.
And,
yeah.
And Armstrong Valley Vineyard and Winery, that
right.
was another one we talked to. We've been on Pennsylvania for quite a while, and I think we have my master list out of here.
It's drinklocalwine.com is that website.
Oh.
Yeah, and actually they've had, this was the, which one?
Briar Valley,
yeah. Now, there, you know, there's a couple that they have said we're only making dry wines, and the wife is the winemaker. If you've it's Todd and Jean, and I'll give them credit. I mean, they that's what they wanted, that's what they like, and that's what they've decided to make. And I guess they've built enough of a business they've been able to do that. But that's more unusual. You don't see that very often.
Yeah, they that's what they were saying. They've got quite a few grapes planted, over 10,000 plants, and Chards, Rieslings, the Gewurz, Cabs, Cab Franc. You know, I mean, it's just amazing some of the. And I asked him, "Do you do fruit?" "Nope, we're staying with these." And so that was.
Yeah.
That's
she makes good wines too. I've only had a couple, but boy, they've been really good.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I found Kathy Sullivan, and it's winetrailtraveler.com. Is the Wine Trail Traveler that they have for Terry and Kathy Sullivan.
And
I was reading,
and if you go to their,
go ahead. Their website, yeah, definitely. I was looking at that, and I was looking at the one of the articles that you wrote. On the website, it says you've had over, 3,217 posts so far. That's, you do the wine classroom, correct?
Right.
off
is that
okay.
How many I'm
I
up to?
That's amazing. I was looking at that.
It is. I don't ever tell my wife that. Me and my crazy hobby.
And you're not getting paid.
Exactly. I may try, come on, that's an echo. I've heard that so many times. What the heck are you doing that for? Between her reaction and my boss's, who, like I said, just likes to kid me, who likes wine, but just, you know, to him, Pennsylvania wine is just, those are two words that don't go together. I know.
Wow.
Is that how, I didn't realize that's how many posts that I was up to.
Yeah.
I try and do one a day.
Wow, that's amazing. I was reading about Boyd's Cardinal Hollow Winery. That's in, I think
the
it's North
that
Wales,
the jalapeno wine.
Yes. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's pretty doggone good. No, I mean, again, that's not something I don't think you'd have with food. But it's the novelty and the fact. I know I brought a bottle in. We had a party here at work, and it went like gangbusters. Everyone wanted to try it. Most people liked it, and I think that's what that winemaker has found there, that it's a popular novelty. You know, I don't know how many times you go back and get it, but I know I have a friend who he likes different type things, so I got him a bottle for his birthday, which I assume he appreciated. So, go ahead.
Is the flavor extreme? I mean, do you get that bite out of the jalapeno, or is it just like a seasoning
flavor? You did get some bite. You definitely did. I don't think it burned going down, but it was definitely some bite to it. I was surprised. As someone who likes their blends, you know, their heavy reds, it was like sacrilege to drink jalapeno. I was like, what in the world is this? But I did like that. That's one of the few sort of novelty wines in the area that I can stomach.
Does it grow them locally?
What's that?
Does he grow the jalapenos locally?
It's jalapenos and raisins. I'm trying to remember from my I can't remember for sure. I think he gets it from somewhere in it's suburban Philadelphia. I'm pretty sure. If he doesn't grow them, he gets them locally, yes.
Does he? Wow.
He does mention that he went to the grocery store. This is in your article, that he went to the grocery store and invested in the jalapenos. He bought 120 pounds of the jalapenos.
So there you go.
And,
okay. Well, that's local.
And
120. Yeah, give me 120 pounds of jalapenos.
That's
amazing. That would be a heck of a party.
he added sugar and water, made a gallon of it, and then it goes on and it says that there was 120 gallons of it, bottled that, and it came out in March. And by the end of June, it was all gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine the flavor or the just the thought of who would. And I think you mentioned something on here. You know, it was one of his one of the guests that he went to the what was the show that he did. But someone came by and said, you know, if you make a jalapeno wine, they'll buy it. And he took them up on it and made it. And it's like it's a hit. You know, it's. And that's something I would never have thought of. But then you go to his website, he's got pumpkin, pineapple, and then a couple of the regular ones in there, but those are the newest ones. But I'm just thinking.
Check out. Does he still have the mead on there? Because he was making mead and then aging it in old whiskey bottles or barrels. I don't know if that's – if he's – I haven't talked to him for a while, but that was the other unique thing that he was doing was – taking the honey wine and then aging it in the old old barrels for a while, just to develop a nice bite.
It's interesting looking at his list. He's got jalapenos listed under country wines. He's got jalapeno, the country wine, and then he has hot jalapeno, strawberry, apple, dandelion. Dandelion. Over 4,000 flowers were hand picked and finished dry. That's interesting.
He's not the only one that makes it. There are several wineries that make the dandelion. Yeah.
Dandelion.
Here it is.
Classic.
Whiskey, mead, wine. He's got several mead. Raspberry, Queen's Delight, King's Ambrosia mead, and just looks like just a general mead wine. Yeah, that's I've never heard of the jalapeno one just kind of threw me off. I said, there's no way. But
we need to get
a apparently
it's
a big hit.
he's a cat, and you know, I talk about why I'm doing it, and for a lot of reasons, it's the characters. I mean, you know, they're all nice people, but some of them are just a little zany. And I would call him a little zany, creative. You know, if he was an artist, he'd be doing a little bit of Picasso or something. I don't know. But I mean, that's really a different wine list, and yet that's sort of his shtick. I think that's when you go there, that's what you expect. I don't know I've never had any of his dry wines, and I think he makes a couple, but I don't even know how much of that he sells. But boy, when you say his winery, I think anyone in that area, they know him by the jalapeno wine. It was a great idea. The other thing that's selling big around here is chocolate wine.
That's everywhere.
And you go to a lot of wineries now, more and more starting to sell it, including, as you would expect, one in Hershey, that's its best seller is its chocolate wine.
Mm. Yeah. The vineyard at Hershey, that's who we talked to, and they said that they're making
there's three wineries in and around Hershey, all probably within 20 minutes of each other. And the one that makes the chocolate wine is called Collari, C-U-L-L-A-R-I.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Salvatore. And, you know, he makes some good reds. Came over from Italy, where I guess he learned the trade, and you know, he does a nice job with his reds and his drier whites, but the chocolate wine is his top seller. I think he calls it Coca Nostra.
Cute.
We actually talked to him, Collari Vineyards from Hershey, on March 29th.
Okay.
He was on that show.
You're doing the tour.
Yeah, we've been on this for a while.
Yeah, we've been on this state for a while. A lot of started March.
Check out one other site then. In fact, they're on the same wine trail as the Vineyard at Hershey and Armstrong Valley. Buddy Boy, have you ever checked out the website for Buddy Boy?
No.
I mean, they are just like they sound. There's no pretenses. They do a lot of fruit wines, sweet wines, but it's about as farmer as you go. What am I trying to think of? The old TV show, Green Acres. It's about as Green Acres as you can get. But that's, again, that's sort of their shtick, and that's how they're trying to make their name. They will never be confused with making serious wine. I don't think they ever want to, but that's how they're going to bring their business in. So, yeah, try and top that down in Florida.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
have a
really.
Buddy Boy winery down there.
Because, I don't know. Well, you know, it's every state has their characters. We've talked to different states on that, and, well, we have found some. When it comes to wineries, we have found our share of characters out there. And it's been fascinating. It's wonderful and great. I believe me, I'm not criticizing them at all. It's been wonderful, some of these people out there. So
I don't think I don't even know how it is in California now or on the West Coast. I don't know if they're all this sort of Stepford in terms of what they make. I think there's probably still enough individuality. But I think this area, being so young, leaves itself open to a lot of opportunists who sort of want to try their thing with their style. And that's, I mean, just a few we talked about are indicative of that. You really, you're not married to having to make the heavy dry wines. I mean, you do what you want and whatever you think will bring business in. And that's sort of all part. I mean, 155 wineries, you know, they're not all going to be the same.
Is that why there's 155? Because of the diversity in the state? I mean,
I think
state stores. That's not conducive of trying to drag people in there. So
no, I think so. I mean, I think what you're finding across both states are a lot of people that had farms that have decided to take that farmland and grow vines.
Mm.
That maybe the money they weren't making in farming anymore, they can make more as as winemakers. And I would say that's not the case for everybody, but I think in a majority of those now in the business, that's been the that's been how they got into the business. There's a Castle Vineyards, again, that's the third one in the Hershey area, and that's like a five-generation farm that recently, I think the sons now are running it, and they've planted grapes, and I think they're 2 or 3 years old now, and that's where they see their business going. That's where they see their future, where maybe they didn't see it in the other crops that they were growing.
And we are finding that not just in Pennsylvania, but in a lot of states we've talked to.
Okay.
Mike has heard this. He can back me up on this. But a lot of them said, we were going to do this, but then we figured we're going to grapes and plant grapes and see what we can do with the winery. So, it's happening a lot.
You find a lot of people, too, that were the other thread that seems to be drawn through a lot of the people is that they used to be in the sciences. Worked in a lab or engineers, or a lot of them seem to have a science or math background, where the transition wasn't that difficult to winemaking. So I've noticed that too, that Black Ankle, which is probably one of the best known, and I think it's had the best, if they've won the Maryland Governor's Cup, I might be for the 5 years that they've been in business.
Wow.
They're in Mount Airy, Maryland. Again, you look at their wine list, it's all dry. I mean, they're one of the few that make Albarino. They do a lot of red blends, and there's a case, and they have a beautiful website too in terms of who they are and why they got into the business and the land that they grow their vines on. I love their website in terms of information, and they give a lot of information on the wines themselves, which I really, really like. You can look and see anything you want to know about the wine is on that site. So, there's a case where there are two scientists or two people with science backgrounds who got into the business.
What winery is that again?
Black Ankle. They've won some, in terms of recognition, best young business. They're actually in a situation where they don't even go to the wine festivals. I think they sell enough of their wines now, and they have enough of a, I think they have enough of a clientele that is willing to pay their prices. And I think their wines are $40, $45, some of their upper end. They don't even have to go to the festivals, and they don't, they pretty much sell everything from there or in some of the shops in and around Maryland also sells their product. What's the other one I was thinking of? Vala in suburban Chester County is sort of the same way. He makes very little wine, but what he makes is really, really good. It's V-A-L-A. And sometimes you go in there now and it's like you can't, he holds you to a bottle. If you want to buy something, it's a bottle of each. You can't buy more than one. But the wines are so good, and he's got a clientele there that there's a lot of regulars that have the money and don't mind paying the $40 or $45 a bottle that he charges. And so there's a few of them that have sort of established that business model. Black Ankle eventually, I think, will be as well known as any on the East Coast. So just give them a couple more years. But as I said, both of them sort of they have their base. In fact, I'm trying to think. Their Albarino, they came out with it last year. Yeah.
Paul, one second. Mike, are we on until 8:30 or 8 o'clock?
I think this was 8 o'clock. We'll go into archives at the top of the hour.
Okay, that's
fine.
We're still going.
Yep, okay, still going. Just wondered. Okay, go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I think I wrote something about their Albarino. And, I mean, they've planted more and they're going to make more, but I think the batch they produced that came out last June that was sold out in the weekend.
Wow.
Wow.
It was gone. Between the wine club and those that stopped, they purchased all the Albarino that they sold. Even the folks from the Maryland Wine Wineries Association were telling me that they had trouble getting a bottle, that it went that fast. So.
Wow.
Those are wineries that if you were going to look at who are the serious winemakers in the two states, I mean, those two would be among those on the top of the list.
It's just amazing what is being done, though, in some of these areas with the wineries and just the grapes that are being grown. You question the ability to grow some good grapes in the climates that some of these are being grown in, and it's being done continuously. So it's mm-hmm. fascinating on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And as I said,
Paul,
experimenting. Yeah, go ahead.
If you're stuck on a desert island, you can have one wine, one type. It doesn't have to be a brand name, but one type, one varietal. What would it be?
No, Tempranillo.
Tempranillo? Really?
None of which is grown in Pennsylvania, obviously. Or at least not yet. Maybe global warming will change that.
Tempranillo, that's an interesting choice.
I love Spanish wines. I mean, I love my Italian wines. I love my Pennsylvania wines. But Tempranillo, I could sit down and have with just about anything. Yeah, I love it.
Well, that's an interesting answer. Tempranillo. I've asked that for a few people, and I've never had a Tempranillo as being the answer, so.
Yeah, like I said, that wouldn't be a local answer. There's a place in Maryland that makes Pinotage. I don't know if you've ever talked about that.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
But he's not making much. But I think that's a case where there's a vineyard experimenting with it, and as they find more and more success, they'll obviously grow more and make more.
I think that's going to happen everywhere, though. The grapes are becoming so global now that you can put just about anything out there, and if it's going to last, if it's going to grow, then you'll go great and plant more of it. And that's, well, I've had a lot of vineyardists and a lot of winemakers tell me that that's what they're doing. They start out with just, a few dozen plants, and it's thriving, and it doesn't die in the winters, and they're happy and thrilled, and they plant more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how is it in Florida? Do a lot of the wineries bring their juice in, or most of them?
Yeah,
grow?
A lot of us grow. Like I say, we used to the Muscadine family of grapes is used really quite extensively in Florida. A lot of fruit wines in Florida, as you might imagine. A few of us wineries, I think there's two or three of us that use the University of Florida hybrid, which is a French American hybrid. Which is resistant to Pierce disease, like I explained to you earlier. But a variety of things in Florida also. A lot of fruit wines, the sweeter wines. It just depends on where you go. We have a winery up in the Panhandle that's organic wines. And we have a lot of sister wineries around here, a couple of them that are associated with others. And then we've got some that do bring in juice from California. And it's just very diversified, actually, as far as where the juice comes from and what they're doing. If you want to talk about a state that's always they have a winery. Florida is the one that probably more than any of them. Florida has a winery, and actually we have 32 bonded wineries. So,
yeah, I wouldn't have expected that at all.
No one does. It's not just Florida, but everywhere. We're expanding. We're experimenting. We're coming up with more. We're stretching the boundaries, and I think that's happening in every state. I think everybody's pushing the envelope and a little bit further to try to see what they can come up with and what they can do, just so they can appeal to the crowds. And you probably know this being, what you do. Wine is the fastest growing consumer item as far as beverages in any form. It's going wild. And so the more and more people that are out there doing it, then the more and more people are going to be tasting it, which I think is great.
Yeah. Well, I agree. Although we'll see how fast that jalapeno wine grows. We'll see how many other places start making that.
You think you get indigestion from a straight wine? Try the jalapeno, huh? Oh, it's coming back on me. Mike, any other comments or anything to Paul?
No, I'm good here. I'm just looking at some of the websites that he'd mentioned and plus his own. So, I'm good here so far.
Paul, speaking of your own, give us your blog address so everyone out there who wants to tune in to you can do that.
Hold on one second. Now I'm going to let me No. You know, I'm sorry. I said we have a lot going on in the office tonight. I'd almost have to look and say, I always type in. You know, you have things like that on sort of a save get where you just go get it. So hold on one second. Are any of your followers on Twitter? I can tell you where they can.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We got all media that's being.
Yeah, used. I mean my handle is Pierre Carafe. So
spell
it's
it
spelled
out.
Like it sounds. Yeah, Pierre Carafe.
Okay. That's on Twitter. Are you on Facebook too?
That's on Twitter. Yeah, I am. But let me give you the it's Penn Live. It's blog.pennlive, P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which
so
I've been slacking.
That's
the blog. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I see. I haven't had anything up since April 27th, so it's been a busy week. But
awesome.
I do try. Generally try, like I say, if to get to 3,000 or whatever I'm at, obviously, some typing. There's stretches where I can do one or two a day, and then with other times it gets so crazy here that I just don't find any time in the day to type. I did talk to a winemaker today that's leaving and heading to the Finger Lakes, so that'll be the next thing I post later tonight. Actually, this is a guy. It's a pretty interesting story. This is a kid. I think he's in his early to mid 20s, just out of Cornell, and he's been 2 years at Adams County Winery, which is out near Gettysburg. And the sort of the fascinating thing about what he's done is they've started to promote some of their wines through these videos, and they're sort of low rent videos, but they're contagious. They're videos you will remember, and he's been starring in them. So I wrote a story about a month ago on the winery and this winemaker named August Dimel, and these videos that this Adams County Winery has started to make. And, it's, you know, they're sort of kooky, but they're catchy. So if you ever get on their site, it's worth taking a look at the videos just for a laugh. But he was there 2 years, and I think he and his wife just decided, I think they really missed the Finger Lakes. So I can't it's one of the wineries, and what is it, Penyan, up along the Finger Lakes. So. That'll be the next story I type whenever I get a chance to type it up.
And your Facebook page, you have one, you said?
I do, but I don't. It's one thing I rarely use.
Okay.
So I do more of Twitter now, which we're just more oriented toward here in the newsroom and the blog.
All right, very good. One another question: who's your favorite baseball team?
I grew up in Philadelphia, so what are you going to say?
No brainer there.
That's easy. Phillies, Eagles, Flyers. I'm a homer.
Yeah.
It's pretty much Philadelphia team.
All Philadelphia and everything. All baseball, basketball, football, hockey. That's it. Yeah.
And wines too. Well, some. some wines in Philadelphia. The one thing I wrote about, there's a restaurant in Philadelphia that just opened there was had a room next to the restaurant, so they decided to open it a few days a week and call it the Paris Wine Bar. And I think they're the first establishment in the state that sells only Pennsylvania wines, and they actually also have them all on tap. So I'll be curious to see. I don't think that's uncommon, especially on the West Coast, but I know it's uncommon in the Philadelphia area and maybe throughout Pennsylvania. So they just opened that place a few months ago, and it was interesting to go in and have my wines on tap. So I might be a start of a trend. I don't know.
How does that settle with the state laws and stuff? Is that
I think if they felt that it was going to get them in a lot of trouble, they wouldn't have opened. I think they were still actually waiting for some legislation to pass, but I think they were pretty confident it would, so they went ahead and opened. And I know they had a big crowd the first night, and I know to me it's for Pennsylvania wines to actually be sold in Philadelphia, it's a big step. You know, these are wineries in central Pennsylvania and up in the Lehigh Valley that maybe a lot of consumers in the city aren't familiar with. So the restaurant itself is sort of an icon. It's been there for, I think, at least 20 years. It's called the London Grill. And they said they opened this Paris Wine Bar, and it's at least the first month they were doing real well. I haven't checked back with them, but.
Okay,
anyway,
yeah.
Yes, so that's a long answer on my favorite teams.
Yeah. But you did a very good segue into wine again. I like that.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I'll tell you what, we'll go a couple more. I got to get off at like quarter after, so if that's all right.
Sure, yeah. We'll use just a few more minutes then
okay.
On there. Anything else, Mike? I asked you that before, but
nope.
Maybe.
No, I'm good. Very interesting.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a great program, and we've talked about a lot of stuff, I think, that is not addressed as often as it should be in things like, you know, what's good wine, the sweet wines, and how powerful they are as far as people's tastes go and all that. And it's, you know, a quick story
ahead,
I had.
I hope it was helpful.
It was. I had a guy come in to the winery this number of years ago. He's a Frenchman. And mm-hmm. I make an orange and a key lime wine, and I let him taste it. And he goes, oh, he said, these would never sell. And I said, well, they do sell. He says, if I opened a winery, he said, I would make very strong, heavy wines, wines that would walk across the room to you. I said, and then you would be running out the door chasing people and saying, wait, I'll add sugar. because that's the only way some of those sell, you know. And he looked at me, and he looked around at the people, and he said, yes, he says, I'm afraid you're right. so, you know.
Once again, reality catches up. Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Paul, thank you very much for being on the program with us. It was really quite enjoyable, very entertaining, and quite informative. I had a good time. And
good.
Best of luck
glad
to
you.
You.
Yeah,
I hope too. Everyone out there will pick up on your blog.
I appreciate the plug. Thank you.
And we'll be following it. I know Mike and I will tune into it and see what you have to say. And we appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. Both of you, take care.
You too now.
And
thank
keep
you.
Talking wine.
You
see you later.
Yeah, we will.
Bye-bye. Absolutely. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Wow, very cool.
It was. That was a good
program. Report. Yep.
Yeah, very good program. We got into some subjects there that need to be addressed, which you don't really think about. You know, and
mm-hmm.
That was good. So yeah, yep. Well, we're done. We may be in Pennsylvania again next week. We may have another special guest. We're hitting different things in Pennsylvania that we haven't had an opportunity to in other states. We've talked to a wine judge in Pennsylvania. We've talked to a wine blogger in Pennsylvania. We've talked to a winery promoter in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff has really been, I think, an interesting aspect of wine, things that you don't really consider, but it's all part of the big picture. So,
It all comes together, and it's all like it says, all about wine. So
it's all about wine. Yeah,
good stuff. Yeah, he has a lot of articles on his website, on his
Does
blog.
He?
That's
yeah,
amazing.
I was looking at other stuff here, and I didn't jump into his website. And so while you were calling him up, I was talking about I'm drinking an organic wine tonight, certified organic by the California Certified Organic Farmers. And I checked out their website while I was on the program. I won't go into it now. The program's getting a little long here. But it's ourdailyred.com is the name of the website. It's located in California. And it's a few things I said. They have a video blog on here, and it's entitled "What Toxins Are in Your Wine: The Truth About." It's a 13-minute video blog. So, if anyone's out there interested in it, go to ourdailyred.com
About the toxins?
The toxins in wine. This is what they're saying. That's why they went organic. But hey,
I see.
We'll revisit this.
Yeah.
So. I'm having organic tonight. It's organic. We'll talk about this more, though. We'll talk about, I had an opportunity to try an organic wine. You were getting Paul, and I was talking a little bit about this and found an organic one and tasting it. And so, but we'll revisit this in the future weeks.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Very cool. So maybe Pennsylvania next week. We're not sure. We'll see what.
Yeah, possibility. If not, then we'll jump over Rhode Island. I think that's the next one. But maybe Pennsylvania again. I mean, if we continue finding interesting and provocative guests, we will stay in Pennsylvania and talk. Hey, it's Pennsylvania's got a lot of wine. Pennsylvania. Now, really think about that. Why would Pennsylvania have 155 wineries? I mean, it just I don't know.
And we haven't really talked to anybody who is in Amish country. I'm wondering if they produce their own thing. I don't know.
Wait a minute, I can't call them. Can't send an email to them.
Let's see what their website looks like.
Yeah, check out their website.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Okay, I can see that now. Yeah, okay. Well, I thought if they did wine, they would do it in the old traditional, very, I don't know if it would be different or not, but it just seems like, I guess we couldn't get them on the program.
Yeah. Well, I understand what you're saying, though. I mean, more than likely, they would be doing a very basic method. They're not going to be doing something that, because of the style of lifestyle and all that. So you're right. I mean, you're talking about true organic. That would probably definitely fall into that category.
Okay. Well, if anybody out there listening is in the Amish culture in Pennsylvania, let us know. Call us. Send me
email.
I don't know why they're calling all of a sudden.
Call us or email us. That is
rough. Yeah, that'll be a while. Okay, I guess we'll end it there, unless you have any final things going on.
No, we don't have anything happening at the winery this week. We'll be open. We'll be enjoying beautiful Florida weather, but no events.
Okay, cool. I guess we'll see everybody next Thursday, which will be May the 10th.
May the 10th.
Right here, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which is 2300 Zulu time. Converted from there. And tune in. And if you listen to us on the archives, thank you very much for that as well. If you're downloading it on iTunes or one of the other formats, we really appreciate that as well. And we'll see you all next time right here on Blog Talk Radio. We will end the show now. And we got 2 minutes of the – oh, that's the other one. Oh, here we go. 2 minutes and 5 seconds of this one. All right. We'll see you all.
Thank you all very much.
Listening.
Good night. See you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.